human relationships that are not centered around the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such relationships are binding. Such relationships create a knot in the heart. In Srimad Bhagavatam, we find the description, Pumsa Sriya Mituni Bhavam Metam Ridaya Grantim Aho Aho Griyaksita Sutta Tavita Janasimoyam Aham Mameti. In that verse of Bhagavatam, it is described that when a man and woman are uniting based on sexual attraction, then that leads to a knot in the heart, which is made tight by Griha, Kseta, Sutta, by home, by land, by relatives, by children, by economics, and all these things. And of course, the material entanglement is described also in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 15th chapter. It is said there the entanglement is like a tree that is upside down. Asphatam Prahuravyayam. It is said Urdamula Adasakya. A tree, a banyan tree with the roots upwards and the branches down. The roots are originally with Krishna, but then they come down, and then so many branches go out into all directions, and it becomes more and more complex life. And with all the complexities, you know what I mean? You get a job, you have to satisfy people. There are so many complexities. One relationship leads to many others, and before you know, it's a network. And this one, you have to work against that one. And it's like a whole. It takes so much energy to balance all these things and to make sure it doesn't get out of hand. Then each possession brings also one has to care for it, look after it, and so on. And that again brings so many complexities. So the network of complexities goes in many directions. And that is how we get entangled in material existence. Everyone is aware of that. The relationships, human relationships, become meaningful when Krishna is the priority. Not only that Krishna is there in our life, no, that's not good enough. It's nice when Krishna is in our life. But more so, when Krishna becomes the priority, then it becomes actually significant. Then everything will change. So that is the unique feature of Srila Prabhupada, who made Krishna the priority and showed it in his whole life that Krishna was the priority. But so many people in India have some affiliation with Krishna. This thing is all the time doing something wrong. Hare Krishna. So, Krishna is obviously part of the culture of many people in the world. And that is positive, and that is nice. But it is not the same that Prabhupada gave. When Krishna became the priority, then suddenly everything started to change, and relationships started to change. There's a story which, in relation to Ramanuja Acharya, about a wrestler. And this wrestler's eye fell upon a very beautiful girl. And he just became so enamored by her that he became her dedicated servant. Wherever she walked in the sun, he would hold the parasol over her head. If there was anything she needed, he would bring. Even before she could think of it, he had it ready. In this way, he was always serving her with great attention. One day, Ramanujacharya came by and he saw how his man was serving the girl, and then he came to this ashram. And he said, Why are you serving this girl? The rest of said, she is so beautiful. And Ramanujacharya said, you call that beautiful? And of course, if anyone else would have said it, he would have been in trouble. But he did have some respect for a sadhu. So he didn't take action. But he did challenge him and say, well, then if you say that this is not beauty, then you show me what beauty is. All right, Ramanujacharya said. Meet me tomorrow at 7 o'clock at a certain location. And they met, and Ramanuja took this wrestler by the hand and took him to many back alleys, left, right, and this way, and suddenly they came into a back door and they were in the temple and they stood before the deity of the Lord. And because Ramanujacharya was there, by his transcendental potency, that wrestler, he got a vision of the beauty of the Lord, and suddenly he stood there, stunned. And then he realized what Ramanujacharya meant. And from that day on, he became a totally dedicated devotee of the Lord. And then the lady starts to notice what's happening here. He's no longer coming around with a parasol and all the other things. What's happening? He's now become so devoted to the Lord and to the deity of the Lord. At first she was a little bit, you know, feeling a little neglected, but then she saw that no, actually, he's such a great dedicated devotee. It is extraordinary. And as a result, she began to bow down to him and she began to serve him. And in such way, the whole relationship just changed. Now, it is not always like that the man is the one who is in the role of the spiritual leader. Sometimes in a family it's the lady. She's the devotee and she brings the spiritual energy into the relationship. So I didn't want to, with the story, create like a sort of a classical model, and now we have to say that ultimately whoever has the dedication to Krishna will lead. But when Krishna is in the relationship, everything falls into place. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there's one of the Chatusloki. Initially, the Bhagavatam was spoken in four verses to Lord Brahma, and then later it was expanded into many verses. And in one of those four verses to Lord Brahma, it says, Riteritam nipratyetana pratyeta chatmani tavityat atmano mayam yato tama yato vasam. Which means, it says there that the value of anything is understood in its relationship with Krishna. And that is a very profound way of looking at things. Because one can immediately look at whatever it is and understand the value of it. In what is the merit in this for Krishna? And if it doesn't have much merit for Krishna, then it's not very important. I mean, that's a fantastic yardstick to sort of put next to anything. When you wonder, what should I do? Just see. Is it valuable for Krishna? If it is valuable for Krishna, oh, very important. Not so valuable for Krishna, not so important. So this Krishna consciousness changes all relationships. First of all, it gives each individual a purpose. Second of all, it gives our interaction a purpose. So like this, it begins very nicely. Then comes the reality check. Then what happens is, yes, we decide I'll dedicate my life to Krishna, but still we may have our human frailties, our human weaknesses. Oh yes, I bow down to Krishna many times a day. Oh yes, I put tilak whenever I can. Oh yes, neck beads I wear. Oh yes, oh yes, I have a bead bag and I chant. Yes, every day. Oh yes, I even read scripture. Oh yes, oh yes. But I have an anger problem, and it's just getting out of hand sometimes. And what do I do about it? You know, I just smash things. That's what I do. Anything. You know, I mean, when it gets too much, I just gotta smash something. You know, like I just, and not only tables. You know, sometimes I feel like smashing heads. Now it's becoming pathological. So here we see these dilemmas occurring. My example is focusing on one weakness, anger management, but it is a reality. Govinda Hari Purushan. The issues are there. What to do? We have these different sides in us, and everyone still has his weaknesses. And it may be my example is not the most subtle one. Maybe there's just something more subtle. Maybe just some sarcasm. You know, just some mental torture. Just someone who's like totally sarcastic and has to just do it again and again. You know. Did you cook that? I thought so. I mean, what does he mean by that? I mean, it didn't sound like he liked it, did it? You know, so this kind of subtle, much more subtle things are also happening. Putting someone down. Some people derive their own superiority from putting others down. And not everyone marries, although we heard of love marriages, but there are also marriages where you just need a sparring partner. You just need someone to get rid of all the frustration of the world and let it out on someone else. So, what to speak about human relations? And human relations, as I explained, they also exist within Krishna consciousness. We bring it all in. We bring our material conditioning with us. Although we are chanting Hare Krishna, we are not purified overnight. Slowly, gradually, we're getting purified, but we're not immediately transformed on the spot. And that is the situation. We may reach up to Krishna with great devotion, but we have to bring it back down into saintly qualities, into being kind, into being compassionate, into being patient, into being loving, into being tolerant, into being wise, into somehow or other giving everyone space to exist. In the Vedic society, there was praja. Praja refers to that which has taken birth. Praja. What has taken birth. So any living creature. And at the same time, praja means that whatever has taken birth has a right to exist. But many times in relationships we don't allow other people to exist because we don't allow them to be themselves. We just block them from being themselves. And then, in that way, we're not allowing them to exist. So, a saintly person must be extremely positive towards others and kind of relate to them to where they are. Not like project on them what they should be. We can live in spiritual life and we can have the highest standard, and we can use these standards or the scriptures to slap each other around the ears.
You're not calling this and you're not talking.
The finger and the nose, which make life very difficult. Well, there are many other examples you can think of how relationships don't work. So, you cannot become saintly by declaration. From this day on, I will be a saint. Good luck, sounds like a New Year's resolution, and usually they break down quite soon. If not on the 1st of January, definitely on by the 2nd. So that may not work. So ultimately, it is recommended that we try to cultivate good qualities, saintly qualities, by just making a conscious effort while we are engaging in devotional service. We get purified by that devotional service, and then the combination of those two will bear fruit in saintly qualities. And this is how we can improve in our human relationships. And I feel that this movement in particular is challenged. It's challenged to live up to its philosophy. We have such an exalted philosophy. And the qualities of a Vaishnava, I can in a moment, if you wish, on my phone, pull out the 26 qualities of a Vaishnava, because I cannot remember 26 of anything. So for that I need qualities like simplicity, ahimsa, non-violence, satyam, truthfulness, akrodha, the ability to check anger, atapalam, determination, cleanliness is mentioned here. So all these are transcendental qualities. There are many other places, also other lists here. And then, of course, get lost in the phone, which we don't want to do, because it looks so weird when someone's talking to you, he's looking at his phone. So. Isn't it? I mean, that's one thing that's really annoying, right? Someone is sort of half there. So, forget the phone, but we get the idea. Saintly qualities are what we need to really change relationships, to really make our movement what it should be, an amazing movement of amazing people. If we want this movement to be a success, it's nice if someone gives a nice lecture, but it's ultimately about qualities that will make the difference. I have one question. What is the most appropriate way to inspire your spouse towards Krishna consciousness? With a lot of love. It's going to take a lot of love. A lot. Because it is through that love that the inspiration will come in the other person, the willingness to make a sacrifice. So it's going to be a sacrifice to make a spouse take Krishna consciousness. therefore it must be done in a very loving way, very that means to give. It doesn't mean that every word has to be decorated with roses, you know.
No,
it means that we have to simply speak with the interest of the other person at heart. Not that we are the center, but that we are going out of our way for someone else, and that we're making, that we are adjusting ourselves to others. Love means that we give. Love means that we are ready to sacrifice. And when someone sees this, that can awaken something. Srila Prabhupada's sister, she was an extraordinary devotee. And just like, looking just like Prabhupada, in a female form, and a little bit more weight. And but in her younger years, she was married, and her husband was not a devotee. Her husband was actually drinking and some other things, which in that society, at that time in India, was quite shocking. Quite shocking. When I first came to India, alcohol was almost not available. They would sell it through a little window with bars, like a post office. And it would give like tiny little bottles, like this big. Huh? And the person who would go there would have to show a identity card, and they would write the name down. So it's a registered drinker. So that was quite something, a little bottle. Yeah, that was what was going on. So now that was, you know, some 50 years ago. But Prabhupada's time, that's like 80 years ago when this was going on. So 80 years ago, this was going on, that a man was drinking. So it was extraordinary. And, you know, but she never gave up. She never left him. She kept on serving, and she kept on cooking and whatever. And it took quite a long time. Quite a long time. But eventually, one day, he admitted it. My wife is a saint. My wife is a saint. And that actually changed him. He changed him. He gave it up. So she conquered him by her saintliness. Now, good luck. I wish you well. We cannot necessarily these days follow an example of 80 years ago. It just doesn't work so well for us. But still, some attempt should be made. How do you help people to deal with their aggression and anger? Yeah, that depends. If it is very serious, then I think someone needs counseling. I mean, you know, Krishna consciousness is not equipped to deal with psychiatric or psychological problems. We don't. It's not that. That the practice of Krishna consciousness cannot resolve these things. By chanting Hare Krishna, one becomes purified, and eventually, you know, psychological, psychiatric problems also can disappear. But the one thing is that people that are intensely affected by such a problem, whether it is anger, whether it is depression, or whether it is something in that category, something. When it is intensely so, it requires so much attention and time that it's just not going to work. We don't have that amount of time to focus so much on someone's particular condition. So such people are best off to just take professional help. That's the reality. And it's, and there's a lot of shame about that, which is very unfortunate. Because we live in a time now where that is not required. We live in a time where it is simply acknowledged that, all right, it's okay to have a problem. There's nothing wrong. It's almost normal to have some problem. Yeah? And then to take some help in dealing with it is a good idea. Because it actually, some big anger problem can just spoil so many things. That is the nature of anger. It wants to break, it wants to destroy. So people who have an anger problem, they destroy others' lives and they destroy their own lives. So that is not very good. But a bit of that we're going to find, right? Something up to a certain percentage, when it's not all the time, it happens sometimes, then it is just a normal part of life. Life is like that. It is. We are not perfect. We are all under the influence of six enemies: karma, krodha, lobha, mada, moha, matsarya, or lust, greed, anger, madness, some confusion, some foolishness, moha, illusion, and envy. It's like these weaknesses will be there in anyone in this world. Surely these weaknesses will be found in our spouse. Surely these weaknesses will be found in our children, in our neighbors, at work, everywhere. These are the six enemies, and it is explained that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is explaining how these enemies are always attacking us. It's like bugs buzzing around our head. The six enemies are always there, just buzzing around. So that is the situation. So what are we going to do about that? Nothing much. It's not that, oh, some people have these problems, but, you know, I don't. No, if you think you don't have this problem, then you have one of them, namely the illusion one. Remember, there are six, and we have the illusion one. Yes. So this is what we are facing. So there must, as devotees, or as aspiring devotees, trying to become devotees, there has to be a willingness to change, otherwise how is it possible? Being a Vaishnava doesn't just mean, from now on, I promise to chant my 16 rounds and I follow the four principles. Perfect. Not exactly. There is a bit more. From now on, I'm ready to change. Oh my God. Yes. I'm ready to actually change my own shortcomings, overcome them. That's not so easy. Not so easy at all. So, but this is required. This is required. What do I do about a relationship that is frictional? Or fictional? What do I do about a relationship that is frictional, I think, Maharaj? How to deal with it? Thank you, Maharaj. Well, you know, it's all a matter of the stars, right? Astrology can show us how people's karma is composed. Astrology basically calculates different elements in a person's nature, and then you can sort of get a view of what kind of karma this person has, and then you can see if two people come together, if there's compatibility. And sometimes they calculate these things and they come to 90%. So that's really a good score of compatibility, and then the friction is supposed to be less. all right, that may be, that may be, and but that's not the essence. You can have very compatible karma, but is the partner serious about spiritual life? That comes first, you know, because you can sit very peacefully together in Maya. What good is that, you know? We never fight. We are peacefully watching all kinds of rubbish on TV. Yeah? What is the benefit of this? Better that one of the two says, this is rubbish. You know, what? You're upsetting my peace of mind here. I'm just... So a little friction is also, can be favorable. You know, some, if there's never any friction, then well, then we may become complacent. A little push, a little poke is sometimes what we need to get out of our lethargic state of consciousness. We need someone to push us, and it's like, that's not always bad. So I feel, first of all, when people come to me and ask about marriage and they go for compatibility, I personally first want to see Krishna consciousness. And if I see that the commitment to Krishna consciousness is very serious in two people, then I say, well, this is very rare to find, you know, a serious commitment in spiritual life. So when there's two people coming together with a serious commitment to spiritual life, then I think that's a good marriage, even if there's friction and all these things. Still, it could be avoided. We could try to grow and rise above it, and it would make it easier, would make life, there would be a lot less suffering, you know. I mean, and somehow or other, it's difficult to be alone. It's difficult. Therefore, most people are looking for partnership and so on. And that's fine. But then it's nice if there is a mutually supportive relationship. Or at least a live and let live, I guess. Because maybe it's not always mutually supportive, but at least live and let live. That is certainly important. Now, in case you wrote, not fictional, but if you wrote about a fictional relationship, then maybe, yeah, you fell in love with a character in a book or something. That I cannot recommend. I think she should go for the real things in this world. Human relationships in the scribble modern world is scary. Are scary. Why have we changed? There is so much fear. Will the marriage work or not? Well, that's because of the culture. We've had a lot of cultural changes in the Western world and in the modern world, and previously culture was holding marriage as a very serious social thing, and if one was breaking a marriage, it was such a disgrace, right, that the entire society and community would just practically turn such people into outcasts. So even in I'm speaking even of the West, not to speak of India, before the Second World War in Europe, the idea of divorce was kind of quite alien. After the Second World War, everything got destroyed. The faith got destroyed, culture got destroyed, and after that, it really the modernity in which we live now where all these ancient cultural values broke down, yeah, that's that developed after the Second World War, and it has gradually conquered the world, because we are all modern people. So these days, marriages, therefore, are no longer being held together so much by social structure. Now marriages have to be held together on the strength of the relationship itself. And otherwise they break. And, yeah, in Indian society, especially in India itself, but also in South Africa, the funny thing is that Indian fathers, they educate their daughters until they drop. Yeah? I mean, PhD is not good enough, you know. I mean, a few would be better. Yeah? Somehow or other, educate your daughters and your daughters. But no Indian man wants to marry such a lady because they feel intimidated by them. Yeah? They want your regular housewife, who is nice and this, that, in the kitchen, and submissive. Yeah? And somehow or other, the Indian culture is a funny mix in this way, because you can see the dichotomy. Fathers that over-educate their daughters to the point that they are like, they don't want to, but they are driven, they have to. And then husbands who don't want to, or potential husbands who don't want such a life. So there is a cultural imbalance that exists, and it is a problem. And because as soon as ladies become educated, which in the modern world is going to be a fact, marriage becomes partnership. It cannot be a vertical relationship. So then the old-fashioned men have to get off their high horse. And that's a bit of a thing, because they've been there for a long time and sort of got glued to the saddle, and it's hard to get them off. I'm sorry to say it so bluntly, but I'm a Dutchman, you know. And we are known to be kind of blunt. So, but this is something we have to understand. We're living in a modern age, and ultimately, partnership is where it will have to go in this time, in this modern society. And mutual respect and mutual appreciation for mutual contributions and so on. And I think that would help in the modern world. But because, so here it's written, human relationships in the modern world are scary. Yeah, they're scary because that social support is no longer there. Why have we changed? I explained after the Second World War. There is so much fear. Will the marriage work or not? Well, when we are devotees, we should become more generous. You know, relationship is about generosity. It's about, you don't have to prove yourself all the time, you know, to prove that you're good enough. You are good enough. Now, let us talk about what could be better. So it's not a question of acceptance or rejectance. It is not a rejection. It is not about each moment you have to prove yourself, and otherwise it is a make it or break it. No. Marriage means we are together as devotees. Now we will work to make it work. And then it will work. If we're committed to work things out mutually, then it shouldn't be a problem. How do we allow someone to be who they are when we are less tolerant and perceive their nature to be disrespectful and crude? Yeah. It sounds that there are two people. This is a description of two people with a problem. I mean, you know, maybe I've spoken a little bit simplistic when I said one with an anger problem, but here we get like a little more complexity, Here we get two people with a problem, and now we get the chemistry of their mutual problems coming together. Right? One is like crude, and the other one is intolerant. Yeah, it may become complicated, so both have to try. The crude one should be a little less crude, the intolerant one should be a little more tolerant. The willingness to change, remember? It's about willingness to change. The critical one should be a little less critical, the angry one a little less angry, the over-intelligent one maybe a little less intelligent, and so on. We can look at all the weaknesses that exist in people. I move on. How do I develop love for the Lord? I feel something is missing in my devotion. I feel guilty as I feel I should be doing more. You speak, how can I feel love for the Lord? You feel that you should be doing more? Krishna is always showing us the next step. So, if the next step is that you should be doing more, then do it. Take it that Krishna is now showing me the next step to develop love for Him. In my case, physically I should be doing less. So they say. Because that's at my age, you're not looking at doing more, you're looking at doing less. You know, you have these karate movies, I don't know if you ever look at them, but you have the one where the young karate guy comes on and he's making all these moves. It goes really fast, right? All sides. And then sometimes the old Kung Fu master comes out, right? And he just comes out. And he doesn't make all these moves, but he just like has one concentrated move. And all the chi comes out, right? And then, everyone flies in all directions, everyone's knocked out. Right? So, in the beginning, we are like these young karate guys, trying to run here and there and everywhere, but we lack depth, and we lack like real concentration and real focus. And then we try to be so busy for Krishna. Of course, we're always busy for Krishna, always chanting, reading. But we should allow ourselves to become deep in our commitment to begin with. So Krishna is really the priority. He is the supreme. Nothing is really important but Krishna. And now, even our relationships, our marriage, if it doesn't help us to go deeper in our relationship with Krishna, what's the point of it? Then we're just creating a beautiful illusion. What's the point of that? If we're not trying to make our children Krishna conscious, what's the point of it? All that energy, so much energy. It's amazing how much energy the kids have and how much energy it takes to deal with them. It's incredible. And we hope. We have to, if we want to give them Krishna consciousness, we cannot do it by dictation. We cannot do it by you must do this, you must do that, that won't work. We have to do it through inspiration. And inspiration means we have to be that. It's like you can't act. No, we have to actually... Kids never do what you say. Kids do what you do. So you have to somehow or other be a devotee and conquer them with devotion, then they'll be devotees. Even in my family, although they are not not really devotees, but my grandmother was really nice, I must say. And she would always pray for everybody. And it was a long list, 10-whole list. And she checked the list. She didn't forget anyone, but she prayed for everyone. Remember, the whole list. And she would care for many people. She had a big bag, a big handbag. And that bag was full of candy and chocolate, and it was good. And as we were growing up, she would give us not just candy, she would give us many things. She bought me a car, she bought me a sailing yacht. Nice bed. Very generous, but also very devotional, actually. Absolutely. She impressed me by her selflessness. She didn't just give me, she gave everybody. And she would give everything away. And it was, she said, I can keep all the money in the bank and wait till I die, and then you will all get the money. She said, but if I give it away during my life, that's more fun, but then, because then I'll see myself, you know, how it is received. Yeah. So if somebody has nice qualities, that impresses us. Yeah? She impressed me by her selflessness. And a thousand lessons, you know, like from a book about moral behavior would not have worked on me. They would have just bounced off. But the example of that grandmother, that made a deep impression upon me. So in this way, we have to actually, if you want to have a family, you have to be advanced. You have to become spiritually really advanced. It's a big thing. So good luck to you all. And because I'm not so advanced, that's why I'm a sannyasi. And I'm not qualified for these kind of relationships. Okay, it's the end of the day. I thank you for your questions and being here at Vati Raja. It is a time where we can deepen our life. That's the idea. When devotees meet, it is not that we are looking for some just some spiritual inspiration. If you would call this a festival of inspiration, I would not be fully satisfied. Yes, it is that, but I would say it is more than that. It is more than that. This is a festival for making lasting advancement. It is a festival, it is transforming. That is the idea. The idea is that when we meet in this tent, it's not just some form of entertainment, some question and answers. No, this is about genuine exchange, and this is an opportunity to go deeper in our commitment. Oh well, then we'll just... Everyone, as Prabhupada said, everyone is flying his own plane. Prabhupada would speak about how life is like a plane, and when it's on the ground, that means in the beginning, then one can put fuel and one can check the tires and so on, but then at one point we're not so small anymore and we take life in our own hands and then we're flying our own plane. And when you're in the air, you're all alone up there and have to do it with whatever we got. So I think such festivals give us so much in different ways. Bhakti Marga Swami has made a dramatic presentation of the Mahabharata, and draws meaning and highlights certain aspects of it, and in that way pulls us in with his incredible creativity. It's something. I happen to be staying upstairs in the temple near Prabhupada's room, and then they're practicing on the stage, right? Just below my window. So I'm sort of watching. So I was watching, and Maharaj said, "Oh, let's do a little Tai Chi." So they all like do these Tai Chi things. And I saw they don't know what they're doing. They had no idea. And this started a few days ago. All these actors didn't know what they did. But Maharaj made a move like this. And in the end, puzzled it all together and it became a play. And now you sit there and it looks like quite something. And that is like 2.5 days of rehearsal. And that's what you see on stage. I mean, it's something extraordinary. So I heard them the whole morning, here comes the sun, but then finally I saw the sun coming, and then finally it started to make sense. So that was nice. Unfortunately, I couldn't see the second half because I had to come here. But here our discussion is also about human relationships, which is a topic which is important to all of us. And personally, I feel that this is the biggest challenge for our movement. In the beginning, there was Prabhupada. Did you see the Prabhupada movie yet? Huh? If you didn't, it's in Durban till Monday in the Tinte, and then it's over. You will not see it anymore. So, or if you want to see a second time, still see it. It is here as part of the festival, plays a part of the festival. And all these are actually deep samskaras, deep impressions, lasting impressions that lift us up in our spiritual life. So that is what we're doing in our association here in this festival. And therefore it looks like entertainment, but it is much more. Here, there's an opportunity to go deeper in Krishna consciousness. I thank you. I'm going to escape. I'll see you again, hopefully, tomorrow and the next day. I'm looking forward to that. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.